This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Louis Barbera. Louis is the owner of VLM Commodities, former trader at the New York Board of Trade with cotton. It's coming up in a moment. Kevin Kester is a California rancher at a House Ways and Means Committee hearing.
I'd like just to say real quickly, for high retail beef prices, it has nothing to do with tariffs. It's simply a supply and demand issue. And we have the lowest beef herd since 1961 here in the U.S. Consumer demand, even at the high retail prices, U.S. consumer demand hasn't dropped one iota, to my happy surprise. And it's because of the quality of beef here in the U.S. So it's not related to tariffs or anything else. It's simple supply and demand, and we just need to grow our beef herd a little bit more.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We've got a special guest as we dig into the cotton industry, and I'm going to bring Lou in. And Lou, tell us a little about yourself and who you're with.
Hey, thanks for having me, first of all. My name is Louis Barbera. I am a owner at VLM Commodities. We are an interbroker dealer, and we have been in cotton for going on 33 years. Started as a runner on the floor of the Commodities Exchange in the World Trade Center 33 years ago, and we've been in the same market, same clients ever since, and cotton has afforded a dumb kid from New York a life that I could have only dreamed of.
Now, you and I have talked in the past, and what's really cool about this is you actually had the chance to be on the trading floor. And, you know, we talk about the demise, or the end, not demise, but the end of open outcry trading. But you had a chance to experience that. What a cool experience that should have been.
Oh, it definitely was. It really was the greatest job in the world, especially for a group of men. You got a chance to stand in a circle with 60 other people who shoulder to shoulder were your biggest competitors. And it was basically the honor system. If I looked you in the eye and said sold or buy them, that was enough. There was no recording. There was nothing else. It was just me and you around those other people with that known trust. And it was an organized chaos. You had to learn how to project your voice. You had to learn how to control your emotions, and even had to learn how to read lips and do simple math in your head, addition and subtraction, all while communicating with other people. You got to talk to some of the finest men and women that I've ever experienced on the phone. Most of them you never got a chance to meet face to face. But again, because you talk so often, you had an unspoken trust. It was just one of the best experiences of my life, and I was fortunate enough to learn from watching some very great traders. Mr. Donovan and his entire staff that he had were instrumental in making me fall in love with cotton and making me fall in love with the process of learning how to trade cotton.
Let's talk about some of your time there, and I want to look at it more from a historical perspective of where the cotton market has been. It's easy to stop and look at where a market is today and not remember that there was 20 and 30 cent cotton at one time. There was dollar plus cotton at one time. So looking back over the last 20, 25 years, if you will, what have you seen as far as the cotton market, the upswings and the pullbacks, and why did that happen?
Most notably, your first real upswing, of course, it traded to a dollar in the mid-90s, and that was unbelievable in itself. But then came 2008, where you had an acceleration like we'd never seen before with the index funds taking such large positions and running the market up over $1. If you look at a chart, it would only say about 97 cents that it stopped in 2008. But in the options market, it synthetically rallied to $1.09 to $1.10. Debatable on whether who you talk to on that level. Electronic trading was really the largest variable that increased volatility in price. It gave a, thinking of the best way to say this, it took a large percentage of liquidity away while adding a large percentage of liquidity at the same time. It was just the exact moment where the liquidity was there and wasn't there. And what I mean by that is, as the crop was being hedged on the way up in 2008, once there was no more liquidity to be hedged, the index fund and the speculators all had hedge exemptions, it seemed, or there were no hedge exemption rules at the time that prevented them from taking abnormally large positions. And that was a large part of what caused that run-up. And ironically, the first time you couldn't trade futures anymore open outcry, you had to trade futures open outcry via the options market. So it was sort of a it was sort of a bad omen on what would happen in things to come in 2008.
We're talking with Louis Barbera, VLM Commodities. This is the Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest, Louis Barbera, VLM Commodities. So we've seen the run-up and we've seen the pullback in cotton. And by the way, I don't know if this is the case, but running up cotton above a dollar usually leads to some demand destruction, which has some longer-term effects. Have we been dealing with some of that demand destruction, or not destruction of demand, but just buyers going to other alternatives? Is that part of why we're where we are right now?
That's part of it. The most recent run up to $1.07 probably did as much harm to the cotton market as a drought would. It forced acres in that probably shouldn't have been there. And, you know, as you say, demand destruction. We are in a different time right now. And what I mean by that is it's more of a global marketplace than ever before. Not long ago, the United States was larger than the next five exporters in the world. That has now changed. We've moved down to number two, and we're slowly moving down that ladder. Brazil has seen a huge increase in acreage over the last couple of years, and it's been a shock to the market. And the biggest shock has come to the U.S. grower, because their harvest pressure is no longer 3 months when their own harvest is going on. Their harvest pressure is now 9 months with the double cropping of Brazil and then ours as well. You throw in South America, the Southern Hemisphere with Australia getting a consistent production, and India looking to become the world's largest grower by 2035, they say. It's been a huge transition, and we're getting to the point where the only thing that's going to save us is demand. And you touched on it, where there needs to be a little bit more awareness on the benefits of cotton and the dangers of man-made fibers.
So we today are stuck in a tight range. I had to go back quite a few months just to find cotton trading above that 72-cent level. And we really haven't seen it drop much below the, you know, the 65. But we've been months in this tight, tight trade range. What's the future look like here? I know you touched on we need to find demand, but what might it take for this market to start moving higher? Would it take a weather event? Will it take trade negotiations coming to fruition where we've got a big trade deal? What's going to have to happen here?
I think that it's going to have to come. A trade deal wouldn't hurt. Don't get me wrong. In the past, our rallies basically have been on the heels of China's State Reserve coming in and trying to refill with several hundred thousand tons at a time. But we've sort of transitioned, and I think a larger transition is underway with manufacturing swapping out of China. You know, most people look to China as the world's savior for cotton imports. Bangladesh is the world's largest importer right now. Unfortunately, they get most of that from Brazil and India. Vietnam is right behind them. In fact, China's a distant third behind both of those. Pakistan, because of their weather problems and their seed technology, have started creeping up as one of the largest importers. So, yes, trade deals will help. But what will need to happen is you're going to have to dissuade the fast fashion industry from being such a large chunk of the consumption of apparel. If we could shift 1% of consumption away, that is equivalent to 5 million bales of usage. And it's really that tight. Our fiber share has seen a consistent drop for the last 15 years. We finally now are starting to get some awareness, and rightfully so, about the dangers to the environment, the danger to our bodies for microplastics, and basically anything you're putting on your body or in your body that's made from petroleum. I'm not here to bash the petroleum industry. I mean, we need it, for goodness sakes, but that doesn't mean you have to layer your body with it. And I think that's going to be the largest contributor to cotton consumption going forward, and that is the way forward to rally. As of right now, you have growers in the on-call report that are the equivalent of 7 million bales that are sitting above the market to sell, and we expect those to start to be sold somewhere around 70 all the way up to 73 cents. That a large portion of that is from South America and some from Australia. That's going to be an anchor over us, and without the demand shift and the fiber share argument coming back into play, I think that we're going to be stuck for just a little while longer. There is legislation, the BACA, the Buy American Cotton Act, that could be instrumental in reviving the U.S. cotton consumption story. And I think that that's going to come up and be a little bit more at the forefront at the end of the year after Congress comes back and sort of gets their stuff together.
And our special guest today is Louis Barbera, VLM Commodities. It's the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at deltapine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, Louis Barbera, VLM Commodities. It's been a great conversation, Lou. If we want to keep it going, where do we find you?
You sure can. You can find us at vlmdata.com. and also on Twitter, Lou Cottonballs.
Again, Lou Barbera is owner of VLM Commodities and joins us on today's Agribusiness Report.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Representative Vince Fong represents the Salad Bowl of California, Fresno, Kern, Kings, and Tulare counties at a recent House Ways and Means Committee hearing.
As someone who represents the food production capital of California, this bill is no doubt a positive and necessary thing for our agricultural community. My region is just 1% of the total farmland in our country, but we produce a quarter of our country's food. My region grows under over 250 different crops. We're 40% of the nation's fruits, nuts, and vegetables. We produce dairy, grapes, cattle, lettuce, almonds, pistachios, strawberries, tomatoes, carrots. So for those who go to the grocery store, I would like everyone to thank the farmers and ranchers in my community that produce the food that we all enjoy.
It's the Agribusiness Report.